May the words of our mouths and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. These days, salt is not necessarily held in the highest regard. When a difficult or unpleasant situation is made worse by someone, we call that rubbing salt in a wound. It's bad enough we lost, but the way they took a victory lap, that was rubbing salt in a wound. When the source or origin of information is viewed skeptically, as prone to be unreliable or exaggerated, we say, take it with a grain of salt. John tells some great stories, but we take what he says with a grain of salt because, well, as everyone knows, John has a rather vivid imagination and tends to exaggerate. And of course, many of us have probably heard from our healthcare providers and elsewhere the oh-so-great health benefits of having a low-sodium diet, which in a way suggests that anything, I guess, can be taken with a grain of salt except what we eat. There we have to be exceptionally careful. Given our current and, let's say, complicated relationship with salt, it's easy to forget and not even realize that throughout time, starting at the dawn of civilization, salt was one of the most sought-after commodities in human history. According to Mark Kurlansky's book, Salt, A World History, for thousands of years, salt represented wealth and a lot more. In the ancient world, evil spirits were thought to be warded off by salt, and is among the first commodities ever traded. Thousands and thousands of years back, when our ancestors domesticated animals like dogs, evidently they did so with the help of salt. They noticed that animals were attracted to it. So they would leave some salt out for them to lick. From there, they then would leave food, and gradually over time, animals like dogs, cows, and goats found themselves coming into the orbit of human life. Cats, I think, may have come by a different route. I think they domesticated us. They left things out for us. But in the end, though, salt was at the center of all this. Salt also had political implications. The city of Rome evidently was founded where it is because its location was near the salt works of the time. The first major Roman road was the Via Salaria, the way of the salt or the salt road. Roman soldiers were sometimes paid in salt, and a ranking officer might ask if a soldier was worth his salt. From all this comes the word I think we're all rather familiar with, salary. In the ancient world, salt was also a symbol of fertility. Fish lived in salt water, and their offspring was much more numerous than anything on land. So, newlyweds would carry salt on their person to ward off infertility. And a man who was in love was described as salix. He was in a salted state. And the custom of putting salt on greens gives us a familiar word, salad. And finally, let's not forget salvation, which also comes from salt, which played a role in the religious practices all around the Mediterranean. It was an acceptable offering for the Greek gods, was part of the burial rites of the Egyptians. In the Torah, Leviticus commands the people not to withhold their salt when they make their offerings to God. And elsewhere, the inviolability of God's relationship is described as a covenant of salt. And the same is true regarding fire. The harnessing of fire was a revolution for humanity, and it forever changed our world. In the ancient world, controlled fire was indispensable, and it was everywhere. Cooking, heating, cleaning, warfare, community, and yes, even religion. All made use and had need of fire, which, if you think about it, is still true today. Cars that bring us here, any kind of vehicle, managed by little controlled sparks of fire. The way we heat our homes, etc. So during the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus tells the people they are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, he is paying them the highest compliment. He's praising them. According to Matthew, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, presumably to get a better view of them and for them to get a better view of him. What did he see when he looked out on all those who came from all over the region? I think he saw the real world and real life as it really is. He saw people who were looking for something. People searching for meaning. He saw people who, one way or another, were told their lives did not add up to much. Whether it came from the Romans, who told them that as a people they are second rate and deserve to be dominated, or from the religious authorities who told them how far they were in not being in a right relationship with God, or from the economic and more well-off elite who told them that they were beneath them and that was their place in this world. Instead, Jesus saw people who were marginalized and devalued, who were judged by those in power, and as such were easily mistreated and could even be easily abused. In plain English, Jesus saw the people and he had compassion for them. He didn't rub salt in their wounds. He saw their woundedness and he felt for them. He didn't prescribe ways to be better. He didn't tell them how to become salt or light. He told them they already are. You are the salt of the earth. You are a precious commodity. You are of value. You are worth finding and you are worth holding onto. You come with properties and talent. Something within you that is and makes you amazing. And you are the light of the world. He gave them back their humanity, which this world in so many ways so cruelly, cruelly desires to take away. This gospel passage reminds me of when I was invited to give a benediction at a graduation ceremony years ago at Rikers Island. Twice a year, a group of prisoners got to participate in a program in which they learned either the culinary arts or computer science in order to provide them, hopefully, with employable skills for when they were released from incarceration. It was quite powerful seeing this group of young men in caps and gowns receiving certificates and being applauded by their families and instructors as well as by corrections officers and prison administrators. Sitting at the dais, I will never forget the person sitting next to me who leaned over to say, "You know, Father, who knows when was the last time somebody applauded these guys? Who knows if anyone has ever congratulated them or clapped for them?" That was a powerful statement that really affected me. I hope there has been times of applause since then for those young men. But that day, those guys who the world only saw as and only wanted to define them as criminals were given back their humanity. That's what Jesus was doing when he went up the mountain and looked out on the people, who in one way or another had been reduced and put down by a tough, tough world. He gave them back their humanity. "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." Not, "You have the potential to be the salt of the earth, or you might have a chance at becoming the light of the world." No, you already are. You are someone. You have dignity within you, and you, as you are, you matter. Jesus uses the images of salt and light in order to stimulate our imagination to counter the negative messages of this world. Messages that tell somehow how we just don't add up and we're not worth our salt or anything else. But that's not true with God, with whom we have an unbreakable relationship, a relationship which is worth our salt and is always recognized. And it's a covenant of salt. But of course, with Jesus and God, there's always more involved. There's more to being salt and light. Neither one of those is meant to exist for itself. Salt and light fulfill their purpose when they are poured out. With both, their value is based on their application on other things, to transform or change other things, presumably, we hope, for the better. When Jesus tells the crowd they are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, he's also laying out discipleship, particularly discipleship expecting action. To a world that is horribly deficient, salt can make a difference. It can help heal and bind up what is broken. Where there is rotting and decay, salt can save. The same is true for light. In a world that is dark and cold, a little bit of light helps a lot. And to a people who are afraid, even the tiniest of light can provide comfort. We are all called to live our lives as salt and light, transformative agents called to help people and whatever else we encounter in life, hopefully for the better. It's enhancement, not domination or being overpowering or conquering. Jesus never told anyone they're Chipotle or a blowtorch. If you think about it, the message from Jesus is one of encouragement and hope. There's a lot of hope in this gospel. To a world of despair, be salt and light. And within all of this, hope undergirds everything. Because hope is not just something that's beneficial or simply an aid. Hope for this world and for living is everything. This week, I read in the Gazette that a team of scientists is preparing to dive deep into the depths of the Indian Ocean, into what they are calling the midnight zone, where light barely reaches, but life still strives. The scientists plan to survey wildlife and gauge the effects of climate change in areas that have never been explored, targeting what are called seamounts, vast underwater mountains that rise thousands of meters from the seafloor. The plan is to go down farther than Mount Everest is tall. Think about that. That's pretty far. But what really struck me was a comment made by the director of the program, who said, "What we do know is that beneath 1,000 meters, there is no light down there. But a lot of animals are bioluminescent. Life that glows." My friends, there's a message in there for us. No matter how bad the world may ever get, there must always be hope in order to continue doing the work of God. If we conduct ourselves like salt, we will always be a force of change for the better. And if it ever seems like we reach a point where there is no light at all, total darkness, my friends, you will glow because you are the light of the world. And don't ever forget that. Amen.